This is West Southwest. I'm Savilla Mann. The global flu pandemic of 1918 still stands out for its deadliness. It killed around 50 million people, far more than died in World War I. No place was immune to the devastation, but City of Kalamazoo Historic Preservation Coordinator Sharon Ferraro says some communities, including Kalamazoo, fared somewhat better than others. Ferraro will present her research on the flu's local impact on Sunday at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum. We spoke at her office in Kalamazoo about what she's learned. Sharon Ferraro, welcome to West Southwest.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
What was it that made you want to study the 1918 flu epidemic in Kalamazoo?
Oddly enough, it was the fact that my great uncle, that I obviously never met, died of the flu in Youngstown, Ohio. And then I read this wonderful book called The Great Influenza, and I thought, well, okay, how did it affect Kalamazoo? How did we cope with it? Did we do a good job? Did we really mess it up and lots more people died than should have? I know we didn't quarantine ourselves, but I just wanted to know what happened. And then in some of the beginning research, I realized that one of the people who caught the flu but did not die lived in my house, and then I went for it, that I had to find out more.
How bad was the epidemic in Kalamazoo?
What I have discovered in my research is that the epidemic in Kalamazoo was almost exactly the same as it was nationwide. We had almost exactly the same number of deaths in terms of proportion to our population, actually slightly on the low side. We had 2.5 deaths per 1,000. The national one was like 4.2. So we did pretty good. We did pretty good. Part of it, the reason that I think that it came out so well was the fact that we were involved in World War I. The Red Cross had been started in Kalamazoo the previous year in 1917 in April. And they had mobilized people. They had organized people to do things like bandage rolling and taking home nursing classes and just being involved with each other at a level where they would not have been had we not had the war. And so when the epidemic came around, there was already an organization in place that had been talking to each other for over a year at that point, and they were ready to mobilize and to do something about it. Kalamazoo had also just changed to being city commission manager form of government, so there'd been a big shift in how the city government was run, and we had a city health officer that really understood epidemiology. That was actually one of his subspecialties. His name was Alvin Rockwell. And so we were kind of like poised. We were ready to handle it. We were ready to do it. If it hadn't happened, it would have been great, but it did happen, and so we were ready to deal with it.
I know the year was 1918, but when did the virus actually arrive in Kalamazoo?
There were three waves of the virus in Kalamazoo, as there were nationwide. The first one started in Fort Riley, Kansas, and Camp Funston, Kansas, in the Army camps. And that started in March and April. And then that was a less dangerous form of the flu. It was a bad flu, but the mortality rate was minuscule compared to what it would be in the fall. The first victim that I have been able to identify is a gentleman named George Stafford, who was an African-American who served with Custer as a white man in the Civil War and actually was imprisoned in Andersonville, came back to Kalamazoo and was a barber. And he died of what his death certificate says, la grippe, which was another name for the flu. Flu at that time was not what we would call today a reportable disease. Diphtheria, scarlet fever, measles, mumps, smallpox, yes. Flu was not a reportable disease. So it wasn't something that the city was keeping track of or anybody was keeping track of. But that's what he died of.
When you say he served as a white man, what do you mean exactly?
Well, he was a very light-skinned gentleman, and he serve in a colored regiment. He served with Custer.
That's how he was able to do that.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That was very unusual at the time. So the first wave, it went on through July, and it spread internationally. It was all over the place. It was in the reason that we call it the Spanish flu is because when King Alfonso XIII of Spain came down with it, and many people came down with it in Spain, Spain was the only European nation that wasn't under censorship because of the war. So that was where we heard about it from. Even though it was happening elsewhere, that's where we heard about it. So that's why it's called the Spanish flu, even though it has really nothing to do with Spain. It has a lot more to do with swine in Kansas than it has to do with Spain, okay? And then that had pretty much almost died out, and then something shifted in August, and it came roaring back, and soldiers that got on the boat in the United States ended up in France and were very sick and were dying in large numbers, and then some of them came back to the States, and they started spreading. I mean, it just went crazy. Camp Devens in Massachusetts went from being like three people in the hospital to 4,000 within less than a week. It was just horrific. And same thing for us with Camp Custer. It took 5 days for them to go from one person in the hospital to 2,000 because it just spread like wildfire. Now, that would be September of 1918, late September. The first victim of the second round was an 8-year-old girl named Otilia Makos. She was, I believe, a young Polish girl who was with her family and her brothers and sisters and her dad. Her mom had died the previous year in St. Louis. And then it just started from there. We had got to the point where by the end of October, the schools were closed. There was no Halloween was not allowed that year. And the schools, the movies, everything completely closed down. Grocery stores were allowed to be open. Necessities were there. Streetcars cut back on their number of runs because they just didn't need, there weren't as many people out and about. Churches were not allowed to meet. Funerals could have no more than 10 people in attendance, including the minister. And they tended to be in the open air whenever possible. So visitations didn't happen. All the things that would normally go with a death just weren't happening.
And then was that the third wave?
That was the second wave. The third wave started because, of course, this is going on, and then it started to abate. And around the 8th of November, the city health officer said, fine, we're going to lift the closing ban. That's going to be great. Well, of course, what happened on the 11th was the armistice, which meant that everybody was back out in the streets celebrating.
The end of World War I.
The end of World War I, and then everybody's out in the street celebrating, and big surprise, 5 days later, it comes back. So we get the third wave, and that went on through February. And the last person to die from that third wave was a fellow named Root, who had actually served in World War I, had survived the war, and then came home to die after he was taking care of his brother who was sick with the flu.
Oh, that's tragic.
Yeah, I know, it is. I don't want to go into the details of the disease because people may be listening to this while they're eating breakfast, but it came on quickly, and it tended to be more vicious to young people, and that's unusual. The flu tends to take the very young and the very old. This time it took, the majority of the deaths were people between the ages of 18 and 40, which was highly, highly unusual for it to do that. And it could be anywhere from 24 hours from onset to death to a month where you'd have a case of the flu and then pneumonia would follow it.
If you came down with the flu, were you likely to be suffering through this at home, or were you probably going to be in a hospital?
My best guesstimate based on mortality and infection rates is that for every one person that died, we probably had 20 people that were ill. And out of those 20, maybe three or four would have been actually hospitalized. We had four hospitals in Kalamazoo at the time. We had Bronson Hospital, we had Old Borges downtown, and New Borges out on the site where it is today on Gull Road. And we had the Fairmount Infectious Diseases Hospital. And then, of course, we had the state hospital, but the public wasn't going there. We lost over 24 people from the state hospital, the people who'd come from out of town had been committed to the hospital, and they died of the flu when they were here in Kalamazoo. So the most people were not in the hospitals of all the people that were sick. I'm guessing between 6,000 and 8,000 people in Kalamazoo became ill. That's out of a population of a little over 40,000.
When you look at materials from the time, how are people talking about the flu? How are they describing it? How are they reacting?
At least from what I can glean in Kalamazoo, because so far I haven't come across that magical like diary or set of letters or anything like that that really gives me an individual experience. But what I've been able to get from the newspapers is that we were getting good straight information from the health officer. He was saying, this is what it is, this is what you need to do, this is how you need to react to take care of yourselves and to take care of others. An emergency hospital was set up in a big, wonderful old house down on South Street that's still there that was used for people who needed to be cared for, but there wasn't room for it at the regular hospitals. So the information we were getting was really good, and I don't see much evidence of people panicking. Kids stayed home from school. People didn't have a chance to go to church, and they missed that, but I don't see much evidence of people panicking. Even occasionally you get someone that would literally collapse on the street and would be taken to a hospital, but I don't see any evidence of people panicking, getting feisty about the fact that they couldn't do the things they wanted to do, especially the people who are used to going to bars or going to billiard halls, actually is what they were. We had local option. We didn't have liquor in Kalamazoo by then. Now, one other thing that was happening concurrently with this was that Michigan was voting on women's suffrage. So the election that happened in early November that year was the year that Michigan approved the women's suffrage amendment. And so that was one of the items that was on the ballot.
Okay, so a big election.
A very big election, a very important election. Yes, yes, at least for the ladies.
Infectious disease was more prevalent in general at the time. Is that fair?
Absolutely, it was. There were no effective medications really to stop an infectious disease, just to treat the symptom. They had some vaccines, They had diphtheria antitoxin, which could treat it once it began. You had smallpox vaccines and that sort of thing. But usually it was a matter of treating what was there. In the same year in Kalamazoo, we had death from diphtheria, smallpox, many from tuberculosis. So just if you look through the health records for that year, you see that. One of the few effective medications that was available was aspirin. And since fever generally is a huge symptom of flu, then people were just dosing folks with aspirin. One of the symptoms of the flu that killed people was the fact that your lungs would fill with fluid, okay? So that's also one of the symptoms of aspirin overdose. So it's possible that some of the deaths actually were aggravated by people trying to overdose, treat too much with too much aspirin.
Did you come across anything in your research that surprised you?
this is one of my favorite stories. There was a gentleman named John Doherty, and he apparently was a little bit of a known drunk. Okay, so he got to, having been picked up for being drunk, he got in front of the judge for being intoxicated in public, and the judge let him off because his family was all ill with the flu. And that I did find evidence of that, that yes, they were all ill. In fact, one person in his family died from the flu. And then there was another fellow who decided that they were going to beat the flu. They were going to have an anti-flu party. And considering we didn't have legal liquor in Kalamazoo at that point, he decided it would be a liquor party because that would kill the germs and they would all be safe. So they got really drunk and they had this anti-flu party and the cops busted them and they got to sleep it off in jail.
Sometimes when you're looking back at a past event, you're looking back at a disaster and you're saying, well, boy, we really could have handled that a lot better. You're saying Kalamazoo did about as well as it could have.
I think so. I think that they might have had some fewer fatalities if the governor's office and the state health officer and our city health officer had decided to close things earlier during the first wave. And if they, I don't know how they could possibly have overlapped the armistice celebration, though. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. People wanted to get out and celebrate. If they'd been a little bit more strict that first time around, I think maybe we wouldn't have had as bad an outbreak the second time around, the third wave. But beyond that, we responded well. We had everything that we knew at the time was being done. We know now that it really doesn't do all that much good to like spray stuff around in the air. They were just pumping all sorts of stuff and, you know, decontaminating and that kind of thing.
And the liquor parties don't.
And the liquor parties don't really help because then you're just getting together to share the germs, you know.
And dehydrate together.
And dehydrate together. Exactly. So I think Kalamazoo just did a really good job of handling it in a serious professional way because we had the health officer whose job was the whole city. We had did not have a corrupt city administration like they did in Philadelphia where no one was willing to take the lead because it was a political hot potato to even admit that there was a flu going on. So I think that we did a pretty good job.
Sharon Ferraro, thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Sharon Ferraro is the City of Kalamazoo's Historic Preservation Coordinator. We spoke at her office in Kalamazoo about the impact of the deadly 1918 flu pandemic. Ferraro will give a talk about her findings at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum this Sunday. This is West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann.